Yorkshire. So I'd like to speak to you today, just in advance. Please God, 2 weeks from now, the shiur will recommence. Next week is Chol HaMoed. There'll be no shiur, but 2 weeks from now, we should recommence. We've spoken over the past years on many issues to do with Pesach. I've mentioned some of them at the bottom of the first page. We spoke about Kitniot in detail in terms of origins a few years ago. Today is a slightly different topic on Kitniot. We spoke last year about the issue of the Kazayas and celiac and oat matzahs. We've spoken in the past about how much one has to eat, how fast one has, all sorts of issues that come up. Gebrochts, we talked about at length. But this year, my brain has been focused on something else because as a few months ago, I'm sure you'll recall, my son got married, Baruch Hashem, and he married a Sephardi girl. Some of you know the girl, some of you know the family. Very proud Spanish and Portuguese family tracing themselves back many hundreds of years. And of course, they eat kitniot on Pesach. Why should they not? Not only that, but they are Italians. They're Italian Sephardi. And their pride of place on Seder night is risotto. They bring out the risotto, and they eat the risotto, and it's their Pesach risotto. And my son is now marrying into this family, or rather she is marrying into our family, or whichever is it, we'll see. And this has caused some level of concern, it's not the word, but thought and discussion. So I'd like to talk a little bit about mixed marriages of that nature, Sephardim, Ashkenazim, etc., of which we see more and more, especially in Israel, which I think in every respect is a positive thing. But we need to have a little bit of put a bit of thought into what happens when Ashkenazim go to Sephardi homes. Okay, what happens when one day we go to visit my in-laws in Italy or something like that, and they prepare for us a meal, and of course we're not eating kitniot. What can we eat? Are there problems with the plates and knives? And what about food which actually has kitniot in it? What are the parameters of that? So let's talk a little bit about that today. The first eight sources are a background, which we'll do quite quickly. And if you want more information, we talked about this about 2 years ago in great detail. But let's just understand where the whole issue of kitniot comes from, and then we'll be able to get into the specific question of mixtures and other things of that nature that we're talking about today. Okay, so again, most people will be aware of the first few sources, but let's have a quick look at them. Number one, the Torah prohibits us from eating chametz, and chametz is very specifically defined. Okay, so remember today you came up from Egypt, there may not be eaten any chametz. And the Mishnah very clearly defines chametz, that chametz has to come from five specific grains. Look in number two, in Pesach, and the Mishnah says, and there is a correlation between that which can become matzah and that which become chametz. I'm sure you're all aware of this. They are the same things. The only difference is that speck of time. Chitim, which is wheat. Besorim, which is barley. Vekusmin, which is spelt. Okay, so far, so good. That's pretty straightforward. With shifon, which is normally translated as rye, and shibolit shual, which is normally translated as oats, but it's not so straightforward with rye and oats, and we had a whole shiur last year about why oats may indeed not be quite the same thing as shibolit shual, which makes people who have celiac issues, myself, I'm not celiac, but I don't eat gluten. It makes me feel quite ill, and therefore, what should I eat on Pesach? So the answer is oat matzah. I'm fine with oat matzah, but is oat matzah really matzah? Is that really one of the chameshet adganim or not? So what I do is I eat oat matzah, and I eat a little bit of wheat matzah. If you're a real celiac, you can't do that because it can be quite damaging to your health, but I eat a little bit of wheat and mostly oats, but if you want to know more about that, last year's shear. But one thing is for sure, rice, peas, beans, they are not and can never be real chametz. We'll qualify that in a second. If you look at number three, the Gemara says clearly, honey, these five grains in, yes, you can use them for matzah, and of course they can become chametz. Orez v'dochen, if you have rice, or if you have different kinds of grain, a kind of maize grain, although it's not really maize because it's from the New World, but something of that nature, corn, maize, lo. Minani mili, how do we know this? Amakra, because the Pasuk says, Lo tochal alav chamed, shivas yamin tochal alav matzah, dvarim habarim lechimutz, adam yotze dehem yichol vasa b'matzah, anything which can become chometz can become matzah, yotzu elu, which excludes those things, she'ein ba'im, ba'im lidei chimutz, they don't go through a fermentation process, elidei siruchon, they just go off, they go bad. They don't ferment, they go bad. Rashi explains, Oriz v'dochen, einosin chametz, they can never be chametz, says Rashi number 4. The im machmitzin otan, if you try to make them chametz, you put them in water and you warm them up, masrichin, they just become like, they just go bad. And it doesn't become chometz. In fact, the Gemara goes so far as to say that the two dishes, as we know, we have two cooked dishes on the Seder plate. We tend to have a roasted bone and an egg, zechel korban chagiga, zechel korban, you forgot your bone. Okay, you can still time to get your bone, okay. We had great difficulty getting a bone this year, but we might have to use a turkey bone, which is very strange. Okay, that's another shit. So what are these two dishes? Says number 5, my shnei tavshilin, what can you use? Amar Rav Huna. Rav Huna said, silka, v'orza, beets and rice. They were his two cooked dishes. And the truth is, you can use any cooked dishes. You don't have to use beets and rice. The Gemara goes on to say, Rava hava mahada, silka v'orza. Rava, who was his Talmud, used to try as much as he can to get hold of beets and rice. Hoil v'nafi mipuma de Rav Huna, since his Rebbe, he say, use beets and rice. It's a bit like, he's a bit like a chosid here. He knows you don't have to use beets and rice, but the Rebbe used beets and rice, so we use beets and rice. Well, you can use anything. Amar Rav Ashi says, you see from here, Shma Mina, the Rav Huna, you see from Rav Huna's minhag to have rice at the Seder, Leis Dechayish Lahad Rabbi Yochanan Ben Nuri, he obviously doesn't hold like the position Rabbi Yochanan Ben Nuri. Who is Rabbi Yochanan Ben Nuri? One of the Tanaim. Detanya Rabbi Yochanan Ben Nuri, Oime, Oiriz Min Daganhu. Rabbi Yochanan Ben Nuri held that rice was one of the grains which can become chometz. V'chayavim al chimutzo kores, and you become chayav kores if you eat it on Pesach. V'adam yotze bo yidei chavasa b'Pesach, and you can make rice matzahs and be yotze on Pesach. That was Rabbi Yochanan Ben Nuri's position. You see that we don't hold that from the fact that the Amoraim, without exception, it seems that we see here, were happy to eat rice in a kind of fermented, cooked way on Pesach, and therefore clearly there is no problem. And the Rambam Paskins number 6, Ein isa mishum chametz bePesach ela chameshis mini dagim bilvad. The only possible problem you can have with chametz is the 5 grains. Vehem shnei mini chitzim shehem chitzav kusemet. These are the 2 kinds of wheat which are wheat and spelled. Please don't get kusemet confused. In modern Hebrew, kusemet is buckwheat, which is not one of the 5 grains. Kusmin is what we call it, spelt. V'shloshet minei ha-sa'orim, and 3 kinds of barley, sheheim, sa'or, which are barley, shibolet, shul, oats, and shifon and rye. Aval ha-kitniot, and he uses the word kitniot here, small pulses, etc., kagoin, oires, v'doichin, v'pulin, rice, and maize, and peas, okay? V'adashim, and lentils, v'kiyotzi v'hem, ein v'hem mishum chometz. Paskas, this is no chametz. Ela afilu lash kemach oiris. Even if you take white rice flour and you knead it, or kiyotzeba, or anything like that, but roitchin, even in hot water, v'kisau begadim, and you cover it with cloths, as shenitpach, until it puffs up, you do everything you possibly can to make rice into chametz. Kamoi batzek, you make it into dough. Shehichbitz, harizim mutzah b'achila. You can do what you like. You can eat it. She'ein zechimutz ela siruchon. Fine. There is a position which people sometimes forget about, in the Svardi Rishonim, that maybe kitniot can become a kind of chometz. So let's not forget about that. Look at number 7, the Ritva, and as I say, this is not always appreciated. The Ritva says, Hani in oriz v'dochen lo, when the Gemara says, clearly rice is not chometz, she'ein on baim lidei chimutz gamur. They don't become real chometz, true chometz. You'll never become chayv kores from eating rice. Elide nuksha, but they become chometz nuksha, he says. The ika alaihu isad rabbonon mechometz. And they are chometz mid rabbonon. So there is a position, says the Ritva, a minority position, that holds that kitniot, some kinds of kitniot, can become a sort of kind of chometz, the rabbonon. Aval, he says, but nobody follows that. Matzinu minag poshet b'chol svarad, but we see across all of the Sephardic communities, he was in Spain in the 1300s. She'oichel mepesach oiriz mevushel, everybody eats cooked rice. Of course, not all Sephardim do eat cooked rice. Many Sephardim do not eat rice. But he says in Spain then they used to eat rice. And they rely on the view, which is the view that Sephardim rely on mostly today, that there's no chometz at all with kidney. They only rot. And they don't hold that they're nuksha, chometz nuksha. They're not even chometz nuksha. That's the halacha. Mikol Mokam, he gives you a word of warning. You do have to be very careful with kidneyot. Shahari nimtse im oires mimin hakusmin, because very often mixed in with the rice, you get little grains of spelt. Tamid, it's very common. The im nishasham, if you leave them there and you don't check them, afilu gargir echad, even one little grain of wheat or whatever it is in your rice, nimse shenesa hakol bebishula bebashu, and you cook it on Pesach, it's osher in a mashahu. Even a tiny amount of chometz, inadvertently mixed in with your food on Pesach, is prohibits the food. So that's why you have to check them. Therefore, you have to check time after time with great care. And the many Sephardim go to town checking their rice again and again and again and again. Of course, now you can buy kosher lePesach, pre-packed, vacuum-packed rice, etc. People still check that. But they and maybe they should. The harbim min hachasidim, there are many chasidim, he says, nimlu mele'echol mehem bepesach, mevushalim, that won't eat rice cooked on Pesach, mipnei irvuv she'olam imahem, because of the mixtures there. And he flags one important point to do with chametz, which is contamination by between rice bags. Of course, they didn't have packaging techniques like we have today, and there were little bits of chametz that got into the kidneyot. Now, of course, there's a real chashash of chometz on Pesach, if that's a common occurrence. There is another reason which is brought down by the Ashkenazi poskim. They bring this reason, but also they say that people used to get mixed up. Nothing to do with chometz in the kidneyot, but they used to see people using corn flour or rice flour, and they would say, oh, I didn't know you could use flour on Pesach. That's amazing. And they'd go and buy wheat flour, and they'd make chometz on Pesach. Now there, of course, that concerns a slightly different concern, which is that not that there may be actual contamination, but that people get confused. Maybe there is room for some leniency on certain aspects of that concern, but one way or the other, the Ashkenazim became machmir on kidneyot, and the Sfaradim, generally speaking, did not hold that it's even chometz nuksha. If you look in number 8, the Shulchan Aruch concludes, Elu dvarim shiyotze mehem yidei chometz, choyves matzah. These are the things you can use for matzah. Chitim sa'orim kusmim shibolet shul v'shifon. Avaloi ba'oiris, you can't use rice for matzah v'shar mini kidneyos or any other kinds of kidneyot. V'gam einum bali di chimutz, and they will never become chometz. U'mutzel asos mehem tashon. You could cook with them on Pesach. Says the Ramah, v'yesh oisrin, there are those who prohibit kidneyot. The haminag ba'ashkenaz lahachmir, the minag in Ashkenazi lands is to be machmir, the ein l'shanos, and don't mess with our minag. We're not going to change that, okay, anytime soon. So all of that, I'm sure, is very familiar. It's worthwhile just having spent 10 minutes going over it. But the bottom line is that really everybody agrees that that kidneyot cannot be chometz. And the reason that the Ashkenazim don't eat it is not because it's potentially chometz nuksha, but because they're worried about it being mixed in, or they're worried about people getting confused, and it's a minhag of kidneyot. It's not a din in the sense, it's become a strong community minhag of kidneyot. So far, very straightforward. Now is when it gets, I think, more interesting and more tricky, which is, at the end of the day, kidneyot is not chametz. And we have to understand that. And to pretend that it is a mistake, because there are situations in which we have to treat kidneyot differently to chametz. And I want to talk about 5 of them today. The first 4 are fairly straightforward, and the 5th one is what's going to cause us some difficulties. So let's first of all talk about 4 situations in which even Ashkenazim can eat kidneyot. First of all, in emergencies. Let's have a look at number 9 and 10. It says the Chai Adam. Now the Chai Adam lived in Vilna. In 2 weeks, please God, when we talk about, is it going to be 2 weeks? In 3 weeks, when we talk on pre-Yom Ha'atzma'ut, we're going to talk a little bit about the Chai Adam and making new Yamim Tovim. Okay, the Chai Adam lived in Vilna. He actually wanted to make potatoes kidneyot. Because he said, he took the view, and we talked about this about 2 years ago, there are 2 different approaches to kidneyot. One approach is, it's a minhag. And the minhag is, whatever the minhag was, The minhag was started in Ashkenazi lands in the Middle Ages, and whatever food they had then, that was the minhag. So the minhag was on rice, the minhag was on peas, etc. But a new food which was discovered since then can't possibly have been part of a minhag in the Middle Ages. So there can't be a minhag on potatoes, or on chocolate, or on coffee, or on quinoa, or on any of these things. Or maybe even on products that didn't exist then, oil products that maybe didn't exist then that now we can extract. None of these were in the minhag because they didn't exist. That's one approach which leads you to eat quinoa on Pesach and eat potatoes on Pesach, etc. Another approach is, no, this is not a minhag as much as it's a gezeira. The rabbis came and said, these kind of things are confusing, and anything which is like these kind of things, which is also potentially confusing, is kitniot. Now, on that basis, corn flour would be kitniot, obviously, but potato flour would be kitniot, and quinoa could also be kitniot. I can't tell the difference sometimes between quinoa and bulgur and all that kind of stuff. So the Chai Adam came along and said, look, potato flour is now the problem. Not rice flour, but potato flour. Don't even know if they had rice flour in Europe in the 17th, 1800s. So he wanted to say potatoes are kitniot, which makes a lot of sense if you understand it the way that I described. Of course, there was an uproar, and they said, you can't possibly make potatoes kitniot. No one will have anything to eat. That's all they survived on, etc., and they overruled him in the end. But one thing is for sure, leaving aside potatoes, he says, number nine, ulechein b'shas adchak, if you're in how emergency is a shas adchak? We'll see in a minute what Rav Asher Weiss says. She'ein la'adam ma le'echol ela b'doichek gadol. You don't have any other food options other than doichek gadol. Very difficult circumstances. Mutar levashal kitniot v'shar dvarim. Of course you can eat kitniot if you're really pressed. So how pressed is really pressed? So obviously if you, God forbid, don't have any other food to eat and you're starving, then obviously that's really pressed. But that could become pikuach nefesh after a point, and there's no suggestion of that. But Rav Asher Weiss said a celiac, for example, who for whatever reason cannot manage with potatoes. Maybe they're also allergic to potatoes, or they don't like potatoes, they can't eat potatoes, may be able to eat kitniot. Because when he says you don't have any other food, he doesn't mean you don't literally have any other food. He means there's nothing else you can reasonably eat. And it could be that a person who is really unable to eat, a celiac who is unable to eat matzah or anything of that nature, could be in that situation. And I brought you later a reference to a shir by Rav Asher Weiss, which I listened to, which is very interesting. He said you could imagine situations like that. And the Mishnah Berurah brings that down in number 10, says that we're machmir on kitniot, but someone who really, really needs them in an emergency situation can eat them. He says even on the last day of Pesach, of course, we're machmir on kitniot, Shvi Shel Pesach. What's the deal with Shmini Shel Pesach? Well, of course, if you're a chutznik, Shmini Shel Pesach is the second day Shvi Shel Pesach. But this year, like last year, we have the situation where in Eretz Yisrael, Shabbat, of course, is not Pesach at all. For people who are Israeli, if you're in Chutz La'aretz, it is still Pesach because you're second day people. Can you eat kitniot on second day, if you're on Shabbat, eighth day, if you like, Motzei Pesach? And the answer is, of course you can. There is no problem eating kitniot. Your question is going to be, are you going to cook them on Friday in your pans or etc.? And can you cook them on Pesach when you're in Ashkenazi and you can't eat them? That's a whole shir. I'm not getting into that now. I'm sure that many of your rabbonim have given Shabbos HaGadol shirim either last year or this year. All the Yamim Tovim this year fall on the same days of the week as last year. So you've had double the opportunity to listen to the same shiurim year after year. That's because the year this year had 385 days in, and therefore it's divisible by 7, and therefore all the Yomim Tovim fall. Next year, Pesach falls on a Thursday. Okay, just to prepare if you're getting in for next year already. And 2 years from now, Pesach is on a Sunday, so you have Erev Pesach on Shabbat and all the excitement. So please God, we'll have time to talk about that later in 2 years' time. But yes, you can eat kitniot on the day after Pesach. The question is, are you allowed to cook them? And most poskim will say yes, because Sfarim could eat them, etc. You can even eat chometz on that Shabbat. The question is, you can't eat your chometz because it's muksa when Shabbos comes in. So if you have a non-Jewish friend that brings you a couple of bottles of beer on that Shabbos, or whiskey, then there is no problem. You've got all your Pesachdik plates out. You'll have to work out what to do with that. Maybe chad pami or whatever. But you can't drink your chometz and you can't drink another Jew's chometz. So you better hope that a non-Jewish guy down the road has a couple of bottles of whiskey for you, which if he's Muhammad is probably not going to happen. But by the way, last year, You should just know, last year in Alanschwut, there was a last-minute crisis. A few guys who owned a lot of whiskey realized they hadn't sold the chometz, and they were too late to do the general mechiras chometz that everybody had done. So they ran to Rav Wittman, who was the Rav of the Yeshuv, and he says, no problem, we'll go to the Arab who works in the Makolet, and we'll set up a special mechiras chometz, we'll put the form together, it'll be fine. So they asked the guy in the Makolet, will you do mechiras chometz for us? And he said, fine, he knows what that is, no problem, I understand. And he started, what chometz are you selling? They said, whiskey. He goes, I'm not doing mechiras chometz with whiskey. He said, I'm from a Muslim. I don't have whiskey in my house. And I won't have your whiskey in my house. Certainly not if it's my whiskey when the Khiras Khamis. Because the guy took it very seriously. So he just pulled out. He said he wouldn't do it. They had to find a Filipino guy that was wandering around the Yeshuv who was less aware of what was going on. All he knew is someone's trying to give him whiskey. And you know, just sign here and the whiskey's yours. Exactly. They did it in the end. But the moral of the story is don't leave it too late to sell your whiskey. If you sell whiskey, which is another situation. So in emergencies, maybe not even life-threatening emergencies, but when you have no other cooked food you can eat, there are heterim, obviously, someone would ask a shaila. And in certain times in history, this was definitely brought in 1942, during rationing and siege times in Yerushalayim, this was brought in too. In 11, we see that also, even people who are sick, even not seriously sick, may eat kidneyot. Number 11 says, the Mishnah Berurah, Pasha, Dehu Adin L'Chayla. Of course, this is clear, this is the halacha for a chayla. Av She'ein Bo Sakana, they don't have to be life-threateningly sick. Demutel V'Asheloi Im Tzarech L'Zeh. Of course, you can make them kidneyot if they need that. Obviously, they have to be kosher L'Pesach kidneyot. They have to have been properly checked to make sure there's no chametz. They can't eat chametz, but they can eat kidneyot. So too, the Chai Adam says on the top of page 3, all these things which are a minag of our fathers, or if you have a baby, Baruch Hashem, my daughter had a baby some time ago, and she said, can we give the baby kidneyot, all the baby milk? Of course, the baby doesn't have to keep the minag of kidneyot. That minag was never made for babies, it was made for adults, and therefore babies, if they really need the kidneyot, they can have the kidneyot. So that's two differences, emergencies and cholim. A third difference in number 13, v'chein mutter. Now I apologize, the reference here went a bit wrong. These are both from the Ramah, 13 and 14. V'chein mutter lahadlik b'shmanim. Hanasim mehem. You can use oil from kidneyot to light candles or oil lamps. The einam oisrim im naflu l'toich hatzajin. And if they inadvertently fall in your food, then it's not a problem. By the way, you see from here very clearly that the Ramah understood that kidneyot oils were a problem in principle. He said you can light with them, but if they fall in your food, it's okay, b'di'evet. But you can't use them l'chadchila, which is part of the whole oil debate, which is not for now. And lastly, number 14, v'chein mutter l'hashhois minei kidneyot b'bais. You can keep kidneyot in the house. You don't have to sell them. You don't have to throw them away. If you have kidneyot, which are clearly chometz-free, you do not have to treat them like chometz. So there are four clear differences, which are uncontroversial, between chometz and kidneyot. The big question, which we need to deal with now properly, is what happens when things get mixed in? Either get mixed in by accident or get mixed in on purpose. If someone mixes kidneyot into your food before Pesach comes along, are you as an Ashkenazi, I assume most people in this room are Ashkenazi, are you allowed to eat it? Now, obviously, if they mix chometz into your food, there's nothing to talk about. Of course you can't eat it. But what about kidneyot? So let's have a look here at these issues. Look at number 15, because this is when it starts to get tricky. The Ramah Paskins, Mihu, Pashut, De'ein Oisrim B'dieved, on a b'dieved level, after the fact, we do not prohibit kidneyot, im naflu b'toicha tavsho, if it fell in your food. Now, how b'dieved is b'dieved? And how much can fall in your food before you turn around and say, well, this is not a mixture, this is just kidneyot. Obviously, you can't eat chumas. Chumas is not a mixture of kidneyot. Chumas is kidneyot. But what happens if a little bit of kidneyot falls into your food? So, normally speaking, the measure for how much you can have fall in your food and still eat it is noisin tam, which is bottle b'shishim. If it's min b'she'ein or mino, it's a 60th. And the Trumas Adeshen seems to say that for kidneyot as well. Look at number 16. Trumas Adeshen, Ashkenazi living in the 1400s, says, Efes nira. First of all, he talked in the tshuva about chometz. Nira, he says, but it seems, im nimtza gargir shel mine kidneyot, if a little bit of kidneyot, some corn or something like that, falls into your tavshil, we're not machmir. You can still eat the tafshil. You can still eat the food. De gezeira de isamashu, because the special gezeira de rabbanon of that chometz is not batel even in a thousandth, even in a millionth. Leisa elabetz for the heiminim is only in the 5 minim. It sounds like the Trumas Hadeshen is saying that when it comes to kidneyot, we don't have an isamashu. We don't have the prohibition of chometz, which is even one in a thousand, but we fall back on the regular halacha of batel b'shishim. And that is how most of the later authorities understand the Trumas Hadeshen. By the way, when it says mashahu, does it mean literally mashahu? If it's one in a million, one in 10 million? Or do we say, no, once you get to that level, then there's nothing to talk about at all. If someone throws bread in the kinneret, are we worried about the water coming into your taps? And this is a real question. They turn off the water sources in some parts of the country and go back onto the aquifers, etc., because of this. And many poskim will turn around and say, look, an isamashu doesn't mean literally one in a million. It means a amount which is noticeable in some way. Yeah. Not in water at all. Bodies of water. Aha. Is he talking about Avodah Zorah there specifically? Or? Right, but it certainly will apply to food. Interesting. So you can decide what to do with your bottled water on Pesach. But the Trumas Hadeshen seems to say kidneys has to be at least bottle b'shishim. But that's not how we paskin. Meaning most Achronim afterwards say no. We're even more lenient. Look at number 17. The Chai Adam says, Mikol Mokum B'dievet, Im Nafol Dava Me'elu L'toicha Tavshel. If kidneyot fell into your food, Mutter Im Yesh Roiv Beheta Kenegdam. The Einum Be'ein. As long as it's not pure kidneyot, as long as it's not majority kidneyot, you're good to go. So if it's 49% kidneyot, okay, if it's visible, then you have to throw it out. So, if somebody mixes rice into your food, says the B'dieved, says the Chai Adam, and we see the Mishnah Berurah passing, this is where the Chaik Yaakov, many others, just take the bits of rice that you can see out. You can't eat kidneyot be'ein, and the rest is fine. As long as it's less than 50% kidneyot, you're good to go. So, mixtures of less than 50%, and again, this is the Psak of the Mishnah Berurah. And this is the way most Ashkenazi poskim paskin. Less than 50% are not be'ein, you're good to go. So, what about dishes? Could you use Pesach dishes to cook kidneyot? So, what's the problem? There's going to be taste of kidneyot in your Pesach dishes. How much of that taste is going to come into your Pesach food? Roiv? Almost none. Because you're buying chad parmi. Well, I don't know. That could be. Soon you won't even be able to use chad parmi anymore. You'll be in environmental sins. Okay? But the Maram Shik in number 19 says an interesting thing. He says, go over the page, if you need to cook kidneyot on Pesach, then don't use your regular Pesach dishes. Use a special dish for cooking kidneyot. And the question is, why? What's the problem? I mean, even if you use your Pesach dishes and then you use them for Pesach food, how much taste of kidneyot is going to come into your Pesach food? Less than a 60th, probably, certainly less than Rav. So Rav Asher Weiss, again in his tshuva, says, you're right, but he's lechatchila, and we're talking about b'dievet. Meaning, lechatchila, if you can use a different dish, if you have a dish for kidneyot, if you have a child in the family that needs to kidneyot, or you have someone who's sick in the family who needs to eat kidneyot, or you have a Svardi relative in the family who wants to eat kidneyot, okay? Good, but have dishes for them and have your dishes for you, but b'dievet, really, it's fine, because no amount of kidneyot that goes into the dishes themselves will ever be a problem when it comes back into your Pesachtik food, and that is clearly the psak that Rav Avadya would give, and most poskim will give, if an Ashkenazi eats at a Sephardi house. Can I, as an Ashkenazi, go and eat in a home which is Sephardi? And the answer is, yes, I can, because whatever taste comes out of the dishes, of course, it's all kosher Pesach, and it's far less than Rav, and it's probably less than a 60th. By the way, there's an interesting debate. When a Sephardi woman marries an Ashkenazi man, or vice versa, who follows whom? I'm not asking about your own family situations. But most poskim, I didn't bring you the sources on the sheet, but actually I've put a couple new sources. The one I put online will have these in as well. Rav Moshe Feinstein paskens in the Igros Moshe. I'll actually give you the source here. It's in the Igros Moshe in Orach Chaim Chelik Aleph Simon Kuf Nun Ches. It's not on the sheet. He paskens the way that you'd most people would pasken, which is that the wife enters the husband's family, and therefore, you know, lechumra ulekula, like for better and for worse, for richer and for poorer, lechumra ulekula. They could add that into the nusach. Okay, she goes with him. Because just like when you move from one town to another town, if you have no intention of going back to the first town, you jettison the minhagim of the place you came from, and you adopt the minhagim of the place you go to, if you're not das olach, so if you have no intention of going back. And marriage is even more than that. The wife enters into the husband's sphere, home, etc. Therefore, she takes on his minhagim, and the Igros Moshe says, that's pretty much what we understand. Rav Avadya Yosef has a similar, but not quite the same sack in an important way. And again, I didn't bring it on the sheet. It's in Yavia Omer in Chelek Hay. And he has in Simon Lamed Zayin. He says an interesting thing. He says, if a Sephardi man marries an Ashkenazi woman, okay? Meaning the Ashkenazi woman moves into a Sephardi home, she's Sephardi. So she can eat kidneyot. No problem at all. She's completely Sephardi. But the other way round doesn't quite work for Rav Avadya Yosef. If a Sephardi woman marries an Ashkenazi man, so he says, well, listen, in his house, she shouldn't be giving him kidneyot. She shouldn't be cooking kidneyot because of Shalom Bayit. But is there such a thing, he says, certainly in Eretz Yisrael, of a Sephardi becoming Ashkenazi? Not so sure, he said. Not so sure. Because he's not even sure Ashkenazim are allowed to be Ashkenazi in Eretz Yisrael. It's the land of Maran Bet Yosef. So he paskens in that tshuva, even though an Ashkenazi girl who marries a Sephardi man does become Sephardi, a Sephardi girl who marries an Ashkenazi man, if she goes back to her parents, she can still eat kidneyot, even though she's married to an Ashkenazi. And he says, and what's more than that, if she has chumrot of the Sephardim, for example, meat, the Sephardim will only eat chalak, meats, if it's glat. The Ashkenazim do not require lahalacha, glat meat. Many of them are makpid, but she can't give up on that chumrah. Even though she's married to an Ashkenazi, she doesn't go down to the level of the Ashkenazim. It's certainly in that area of glat meat. So it's very interesting. So the Rav Avadya says it's not a two-way street. When a Sephardi girl marries an Ashkenazi, she doesn't become completely Ashkenazi. She just doesn't eat kidneyot in the house in front of him, but then she can nip back home again and eat them over there. But be that as it may, you can read that tshuva yourself. Rav Avadya clearly passes, and I want to look at this tshuva in some detail, that if an Ashkenazi goes to eat with Sephardim, he can eat off their plates. Look in number 20. Sheila. Ashkenazim who don't eat kidneyot, lehitareach b'yemei Pesach bebeit haSfaradim. Okay, can they go and visit Sfaradim? Leechol mitavshil shenitbashel bekelim shebishlu behem ores v'kidneyot bepesach. They're using kelim, obviously, which are used for kidneyot. Can the Ashkenazim eat food from those kelim? Tshuva, and he answers. B'pesachim mivor, it's clear in Pesachim. Shirak chamesh is many dagam b'ayim lidei chimetz. Only the five grains become real chometz. Masha'ein kein oriz v'doichen, clearly rice and maize don't become chometz. She'ein b'hem chashash chimetz klal, we pasken, they're not even nuksha, they're not any kind of chometz at all. U'mutel levashon le'achlam b'pesach. V'chein asu ma'aseh rav migidoyle ha'amoraim, and we see that clearly. K'mavor b'pesachim, as we see Rav Huna had rice at his seder. And this is the minhag in all Sephardi lands, v'arzot ha-mizrach, and in the eastern countries, okay, in Iraq, etc., in Persia, le'echol oirez v'kidneyot b'pesach v'chein pasku ha-tuv ha-shulchan aruch. Fine. V'hinei ha-ramah, the ramah paskens, she'davah posha she'im naflu ha-kidney le'toch tavshel b'pesach, einam oizrim ha-tavshel b'dievet. The ramah paskens that even though we don't eat kidneyot, if they fed in your food, it's okay. Because of Ha'Eliyarabba, and the Eliyarabba writes, Shekol sheyesh roiv heta muta. And it wasn't just the Eliyarabba, the Chai Adam said this, the Chok Yaakov, the Mishnah Berurah. It only has to be bottle b'roiv. The ain't sarach shishim. You don't need 60 times. V'afal pisha b'shalash and tshuvas trumas adeshen, mashma k'sas sheyesh sarach shishim. Even in the trumas adeshen does indicate maybe you do need 60. Rak ein oisim mamashu. They just don't prohibit in a tiny amount. Ha'ika kedasa ramah. We don't pass in that way. Kevin shebelav hachi ein zemidina. Since anyway, there's not really a din. Ela chumra. It's a chumra. Baharchaka ba'alma. It's a It's a big chumrah. Don't forget that the Torah, when talking about, I think it's the Torah, Kinyot says it's a minak shtut. Says it's like he doesn't understand why anyone would even have that. Okay, fine. We're Ashkenazi. I'm an Ashkenazi. I don't eat kidneyot. So, but he said it's certainly a harachaka. Lechen kol sheyesh roiv heta betel. Lefiza, therefore, underlined. Hadava boror. It's clear to me she'ein pleitat akelim shebishuloi bahem oriz v'kidneyot. If you cooked rice or peas in kelim and taste comes out, that taste does not ein oseret hatasha livnei Ashkenazi. It will not prohibit the food for Ashkenazim shenogim lachme, even those who are machme, but oriz v'kidneyot. Afilu im akelim bein bnei yomam yesh lahate. Even if they cooked rice this morning, you don't have to wait 24 hours. Even within that day, if they cooked rice this morning, because the taste is taste of heta, and when it's mixed in, for the Sephardi, for sure it's heta, because they're allowed to eat kidneyot, and if for you, the Ashkenazim, it's bottle baroi for sure as well. Now, Rav Weitzman, and I'll move on to him in a second, but I'll just mention this, that if an Ashkenazi wants to borrow kalim, borrow pots and pans from a Sephardi neighbor, can they do that? That's a little bit different, because you're not going into the Sephardi home, you're borrowing the Sephardi pots. There he said that you can, but they have to be enon ben yomam, okay? They have to be more than 24 hours until and since they were last used for kidneyot, but after 24 hours for sure you can do, because we're talking about kidneyot, we're talking about, not talking about issa, we're talking about a minhag of that nature. But if you're eating in the Sephardi home, look at the sikum at the bottom, besikum mutter. La Ashkenazim hanogim issa ba'oriz v'kidneyot b'pesach lehitarech b'beit ha'svardim, b'beit ha'svardi, ve'edut ha'mizrach. Shenogim hetza ba'oriz v'kidneyot b'pesach le'echol me'atzashinim. They can eat from the food, hamugashim, which are served in front of them. Afilu im heim yoidim b'birur, if they know full well, shenitbashel b'kelim ha'heim ba'oisa yom oriz v'kidneyot. And if they happen to serve you a bit of rice, just take it and put it to the side and throw it, it'll put it to the side and you're good to go. Fine. All of that is fairly uncontroversial, I think. Okay, and at the end he finishes, by the way, v'ha'emid v'ha'shalom ahevu ki atera darcheha darche noam. He wants those different tracks, and we want to be b'shalom with each other, and it's good that people can eat in each other's homes. Yes.
So does that mean that an Ashkenazi doesn't have to be careful when he decides to go to a hotel? And he can go to a hotel that maybe is serving a meal and just pick what he's going to pick.
So then you get into, so that's kind of where we say going into the next. What is the level of b'di'evet? So we said, b'di'evet, the Ramah says, if kidneyot go in your food, it's okay, b'di'evet. Now, Rav Avadya clearly is saying that eating at your neighbor's house is b'di'evet, meaning you can't not go to your neighbor. The idea of shalom bayis, and not just within your own home, but within the Jewish people, is very important, and therefore, clearly, that wouldn't be a problem. Now, you're saying, I want to go to a hotel program, which is a Sephardi hotel program, and they serve kidneyot in the food. Am I allowed to eat the kidneyot? So obviously, be'ein, raw kidneyot, or pure kidneyot, let's say, you can't have a plate of chumash, you can't have a plate of rice. But if it's mixed in, so I think there are poskim that will certainly say yes, and maybe it depends on what the level of b'di'evet is. Let's say your wife wants to go with her parents, and they're in a Sephardi hotel or whatever it is, then that sounds to me to be b'di'evet. Okay? If there is such a thing, nowadays all the programs are non-gebrochts, non-kidneyos, no, you know, you won't find anything. No food. No edible food, anyway. Yes. Aha. Rice in the salt shakers. How did you discover the rice and the salt shakers? Were you emptying the salt shakers to check for the rice? Okay, there's something to watch out for, right? I was once in Golders Green in a very frum shul, okay? And I needed a sefer, and I asked someone where the sefer was, and they said, "It's we keep it on the top shelf there." So I went, I can't remember what the sefer was. I took the sefer off, and behind the sefer was half a loaf of bread on chometz, on Chol HaMoed Pesach, okay? I beckoned to the guy and said, "You got to see this, okay?" Oh, it was. The truth is, I think the bread had been there for quite a long time. It was probably Nifsal Machilas Kalev. It's fine. Yes. String beans are kidneyot. Yeah, so string beans are definitely kidneyot. Now, again, so far not so controversial, maybe, okay? Although there are many people who won't even mish on Pesach, they won't eat in anybody's home, no matter who they are. That's an interesting minhag. How that minhag fits with the idea of Bein Adam L'Chaveru V'Ahavta L'Recha Kamocha, it sounds to me to be a minhag, which maybe it's useful in some communities where people are genuinely not Shomer Mitzvot, and therefore you can't say, I'll eat here and not eat there. I get that, for the rov of a community. But if you're in a frum community, to say you won't eat in someone else's home, to me, is very, very strange, and I don't know how that squares with Bein Adam L'Chaveru. But the next level is, well, okay, fine. What about if food is made for Sfaradim, for non-Ashkenazim, for Sfaradim, and they put kitniot in it, and it says, la'ochlei kitniot bilvat. So Rav Weitman, who was at the shul in Alon Shvut, gave a shir last week about this. He said, listen, there is a problem of bittul issur lechatchila. You cannot put food, which is prohibited, into your food and then say, well, it's okay, it's bottle, because it's less than a 60th or it's less than the majority, whichever it is. You can't drop milk into your chicken soup and say, but Rabbi, it's less than a 60th, what's the problem? You can't taste it. That's called bittul issur lechatchila. But what happens if the people that are mixing it in, it's not isur for them, it's heter for them. And then you buy it, is there a problem of bittul issur lechatchila when the people who made it didn't think that it was asur? Let me give you some examples before we get to kitniot. Let's take a slightly different example, but let's take strawberry jam. You go and buy strawberry jam from a regular non-Jewish jam producer, jelly, whatever you call it, and it's got bits of insects in it. They don't check it completely for insects the way we would check it for insects. Okay, I'm sure they have food standards. They're not going to have mamish insects, but it's pulverized insects in your strawberry jam. Do you care? The answer is, you don't care. Anything that's there is bottle b'shishim. Now, we had a discussion about the honey. Remember the honey with the bee's knees in the honey? But the problem there was you could see them. You could see these little black things floating around your honey, and that was the question that we had. And even then, Tosfos said maybe it's okay because they're not really issa, etc. But if you can't see them, it's all but isn't that bittul issur lechatchila? They purposely mushed these insects in. The answer is no, because they're non-Jewish people making jam. They don't think it's even osa, and therefore there's no bittul issur. So you can eat it. Another example, we talked about sherry cask whiskey. And we said, if there is a sherry taste in the whiskey, is that a problem? We had a whole shir on this. And one of the things we said, well, if it's issur, isn't that bittul issur lechatchila? They've mixed in a prohibited taste, if it's prohibited. I'm not getting into the whole shir again. And one of the suggestions made is no, because the Scottish whiskey producers don't consider the sherry to be issur, because it's sherry to them. They're not Jewish. And therefore, when they mix a tiny amount of sherry into your whiskey, that's not bittul issur lechatchila, because for them it's not issur. Comes along Rav Weitman. We'll see, it's not his psak. It's a psak of many poskim in Israel. If people make food for Sfaradim, okay, I'm not a posek, so I urge you to ask your own Rav if you're interested in this shaila. If people make food for Sfaradim and say, la ochle kitniot bilvad, the fact that it says la ochle kitniot bilvad means that it's made for Sfaradim, which means it's a mixture of heta, not issa, which means Ashkenazim can eat it. Meaning, if somebody comes to you as an Ashkenazi, and again, please don't take this as a psak. I'm going to show you soon that it is a psak of many poskim. If people come to you as an Ashkenazi and says, let me sprinkle rice into your food on Pesach, the answer is you can't do that. I don't eat rice, and therefore, b'dieved, it's bottle. But l'chatchila, you can't put rice in my food. But if somebody puts rice into a Sfaradi's food, okay, and it's for Sfaradim, so there's no issa there, because they're allowed to eat it. Now you as an Ashkenazi come and say, well, 1 second, it's got kidneys mixed in. Okay, well, that was b'dieved. It wasn't issa lechatchila for you because the Sfaradim can eat it. And therefore, Rav Weitman basically said that any food which is not pure kidneyot, obviously hummus, rice, etc., you can't eat, but any food which has got kidneyot mixed in with it, which is less than 50%, if it was made for Sephardim, for whom it is not prohibited, then it's bottle, barov, and Ashkenazim can eat it. And therefore, the very fact that it says, la'ochlei kitniot bilvad, is itself a reason that Ashkenazim can eat it. You get what I'm saying? That's one of the reasons why the people are very reluctant to give whiskey with a heksher, which has sherry taste in it. Because once you put a heksher on the bottle, you're saying this is made for Jews. Once you say it's made for Jews, you can't claim that it's bittul issa, it's not bittul issa lachadchila, because before we said, well, the non-Jews don't, they just make it for the non-Jewish market. Therefore, for them, it's okay. But once there's a heksher on the bottle, maybe it's not okay, which is ironic because the heksher makes it worse, not better. Okay? Here too, la'ochle kitniot bilvad, according to these poskim, may make it better. And if you think I'm making this up, I'm not. Go over to page 5, please. I'm not telling you to rely on this, and I don't rely on this, but it's very interesting. Look at number 21. This is a tshuva from Shut B'Mareh Bazak. Mareh Bazak, this is the tshuvas of Eretz Chemda. Now, many of you will be familiar with Eretz Chemda. It's a very reputable Beis Din. I once had a case in Beis Din. I went to, with my wife to the Eretz Chemda Beis Din. They were fantastic. I would recommend them. We totally lost the case, I must tell you. But the way that they dealt with it was superb, very, very professional. They're a very. I gave you a footnote at the bottom to who is on there. On their Beis Din, so you can see Rav Zalman Nechemya Goldberg, very, very senior poskim, and they produced a set of tshuvas, which are online as well. And look at number 21. Look with me, number 21. Sheila. Ketzad yesh linhog b'kehila Ashkenazit b'noisei ha'tarovis kitniyos b'pesach b'dieved. How do we deal with Ashkenazim for whom mixtures of kitniyot are allowed only b'dieved? Is buying from a shop, and this is like your question about the program, is buying from a shop where there's possible that there's kinyot in it, is that called b'dieved if you don't know? What if you don't know the percentage of kinyot? You're not sure if it's more than 50% or less than 50%. And you can't actually ascertain what the answer is. So look what he says, tshuva. And Ashkenazi, it's talking about Ashkenazim here. An Ashkenazi is allowed to buy and to eat food which contains kitniot, but Tanai, on condition, Sheroiv Hamachal Einu kitniot, on condition that the majority of the food is not kitniot. That's definitely better if it's mixed before Pesach. Certainly, because some people are even more lenient with oils. This is irrespective of the oils of kitniot. Even if you hold that oil is asur, Rav Weidman himself prohibits canola oil to Ashkenazim. He himself is Ashkenazi. But that's irrespective of this. If it's mixed in before Pesach in less than the majority, he says it's mutar. Or minim sheyesh legabeim safek, or if there's questionable kitniot products, imhein bichlag gezer kitniot kagoin egozi adama, like peanuts, etc., vasoya. It's okay if it's less than 50%. Ulam, however, but Pesach, on Pesach itself, ein lahachin tavshil kezer lechatchila, you shouldn't be mixing kitniot on Pesach itself. Veyesh matirim levatel et kitniot lifnei Pesach. But before Pesach, it's maybe okay to put kitniot in. When you end up with a food on Pesach, you can't actually tell how much kinyot's in it. You can put extra food into it, so that you can definitely make sure the kinyot are less than 50%, which normally you can't do. Now, these seem to me to be quite wild heterim. Okay? But this is a heter which was given 25 years ago. This tshuva was given in 1996. How long ago is that? Sounds like a long time ago to me, 1996. 20 years ago, okay? So this obviously is not something which is that unusual, and this is a psak given by Rav Dov Lior, Rav Nachum Rabinovitz, and Rav Yaakov Ariel. Now, according to this psak, an Ashkenazi will be allowed to go and buy cakes and such of that nature in a supermarket that says la'ochle kitniot bilvad, because they've all been mixed before Pesach, and they're all less than 50% kitniot for sure, and they're probably oils anyway, and therefore they will be allowed. Yes?
For another example,
tuna b'shemen. Tuna b'shemen, for sure. And even if you can taste the kitniot, it's not that if you can't taste, it's bottle b'roiv. Bottle b'roiv means you can taste it. It's just a minority. So if this psak were to be followed by a larger community, I'm not suggesting it, this would radically change the way that everybody shops on Pesach or for Pesach. In a minute, we'll talk about whether it's a good idea to put out psakim like this or whether it's bad for people. Let me give you one other example, which came out last year. Rav Eliakim Levanon, which I've brought you at the bottom of page 5, put out a psak last year and said that rice cakes produced by B&D, specific brand, were permissible even for Ashkenazim. You can actually eat raw, pure rice cakes on Pesach. Not any other brand, because he investigated this brand. But why did he give this hetzer? And I brought you the hetzer here on the side, and I brought you a link in the footnotes to the tshuva at length. Why does he say these rice cakes are okay for Ashkenazim? The answer is because he investigated the production line for these rice cakes, and they are not in any way mixed with liquid. They are completely blitzed, whatever they do with rice cakes to make them taste like styrofoam. Whatever they do to it, they do to these rice cakes, okay? And there's not a drop of water, and he says all of the reasons for not eating kitniot do not apply. Even if there were bits of wheat mixed in with this rice, which is highly unlikely, if you did this particular production technique to them, even the wheat wouldn't be chometz, because it would just be parched wheat, which is not chometz. There's no liquid. So what possible reason could Ashkenazim have for not eating this, when even if it was pure wheat, it would be fine on Pesach? That's a good question. So he put out a psak when he said, you Ashkenazim can buy these rice cakes. He said, I don't know about any other rice cakes because I didn't investigate. Don't take this as a general psak. And that's, of course, the question. Once people hear this, they'll say, oh, Rabbi Levanon says you can eat rice cakes on Pesach. He didn't say that. He said this particular brand. So I want to look a little bit for the last 5 minutes at the meta-halachic issue. What do we think about this? Do we think this kind of, we've seen here two very big heterim. One, that certain kinds of pure kitniot rice cakes in this case are maybe completely fine for Ashkenazim, according to Rav Levanon. And Rav Levanon is not a progressive, innovative, left-wing, modern Orthodox thinker. Rav Levanon is a Rosh Hashiva of Elon Moreh. He's out there, in the Shomron, not trying to make waves in the innovation of halacha. But he says it's mutter, it's mutter. And the other psak that we saw, which we saw quite a few poskim say, which is food which has kitniot even mixed in on purpose, is okay as long as it's made for Sfaradim, as long as it's less than 50%, etc. So let's look a little bit on page number 6, and we'll see a few issues, and then we'll talk about the minag, and then we'll wrap it up. Metahalaki means, let's not talk about the specific, but the way that halacha works generally. Like one level of abstraction into the halachic process itself. So let's have a look here. Number 22. The Shulchan Aruch writes, Yesh mi shekasev. There is a view. She'asa l'chacham l'hatir davar hatamua shenira l'rabim shehitir etais. There is a view, says the Shulchan Aruch, that a Rav cannot just come along and say something is mutter when everyone thinks that it's osa. And all of a sudden the Rav said it's mutter. You shouldn't do that. Why should you not do that? Because people think you're making it up as you go along. The rabbis always said this is osa. And this year they say it's mutter. What's going on here? If this is mutter, maybe everything could be mutter. There are no shortage of leitzim out there who would love to jump on the bandwagon and say, oh, you see, this is proof, to quote the different context, but where there's a rabbinic will, there's a halakhic way. Oh, the rabbis, basically, they can do whatever you nudge them. Someone once put it like this, that this view is that halacha is like orthodontics. Given enough time and pressure, you can move anything anywhere. Okay? That's not true of halacha. We all know that. That's an ignorant and arrogant approach. But this kind of psak, does that give people that feeling? So the shach comes along in number 23 and says, She'asul chacham, nir dahainu davki im matir bestam. But this problem only is if the rav comes along and just stam, says it's mutter. He doesn't give reasons. But if he explains to people who are asking, Tam Badava, why did I tell you this is mutter? Umariloi pnim, okay, panim oi shemevi rias, or he brings proofs, he shows you what his thinking is, mitocha sefer, from the sources, then mutar. Nobody says that a rav is not allowed to be lenient. It's just you're not allowed to be lenient when no one knows why you're being lenient. But says the shach, if you explain the reasoning, of course other people can disagree with you. They don't have to agree, but it's not wrong for you to permit something if you explain where you're coming from. So maybe on that basis, it's okay. On the other hand, I brought you number 24, which I'm not going to read again, the comment that we saw just a few weeks ago on gelatin, where Diana Bramsky in London says there's no way that I'm going to allow gelatin made from non-kosher animal sources. We saw this a few weeks ago. Even though he himself, in terms of the halakhic arguments, was persuaded that it probably wasn't such a problem, because it was denatured and put together again. He says, I'm not going to allow something that every single person out there on the street knows is osa. Because then they'll just turn around and say, well, the rabbis make it all up as they go along. So I'm not even going to allow it, even if it is mutter. Could the same be said about kitniot? Or are you dealing with a completely different thing? And this is where I feel that there are two conflicting approaches on this. First of all, at Pesach time, people don't like to hear kulas. Well, there are different people. Some people do like to hear kulas. Some people don't like to hear kulas. There are rabbonim that go in different directions. I remember Dayan Gershon Lopian, Zecher Tzadik Livrocha, who used to say, I have the recording on my computer. He used to say every year that I cook Pesach cakes, maybe it was his wife that cooked them actually, in my chometz stick oven. That's what he did every year. He said, I don't kasher my oven for Pesach, because that's very complicated. I give it a clean, just like you'd clean it between maybe milchiks and fleishiks. Don't kasher it, just clean it so there's no bits dripping off it. I put my Pesach stick kelim with my Pesach cakes into my chometz stick oven, and I cook them. And anything that's chometz taste from the walls of the oven is all bottled b'shishim, because it's before Pesach. And on Pesach itself, there's an issa mashu, but before Pesach, chometz is bottled b'shishim. Now, when you hear that, how do you feel? Liberated or horrified? Okay? He said, for example, you can wash your Pesach kelim in your chometz stick dishwasher before Pesach or after Pesach, just not on Pesach. On Motzei Pesach, when you're clearing up, put all your Pesach stick pots and pans and kelim into your chometz stick dishwasher. As long as it's not got mamash chometz floating around, give it a clean and wash it because it was the problem. Now again, some people feel, wow, this is amazing. And some people feel just like the shuddering of the process. Rav Shlomo Zalman used to say, this is a kula shehad sibo eino yochel lamod boy. This is, obviously the expression is a chumrah that the community can't keep. But this is a kula the community can't keep. And I think there are two ideas that I just want to finish with. On the one hand, minhag is very important. And many of the people who want to chip away at minhag over the last 150 years have been people who were really trying to chip away at the halachic process itself. And let's not be blind to that. Now, obviously, Dan Lopian is not one of those people. He was trying to give help Simchas Yontzef, especially for the women who were doing more than they needed to do. He wanted them to have Simchas Yontzef. But let's not forget that there is an attempt to try and innovate in halacha, and minhag is often the first victim of that. So let's not be blind to people who want to do more than just be easy on people, but want to actually destroy halacha, and minhag may be part of that process. And there's a whole open orthodox discussion to be had as to how that works. By the way, it's very interesting. Just anecdotally, the conservative movement in America permitted kitniot on Pesach only in 2015. Okay? And there was a vote, 15 in favor, 3 opposed, or 4 abstaining. Okay? Same-sex marriage was permitted many years before unanimously. And in terms of Ikrei Emunah, already decades before they went by the wayside. But kitniot, you're not going to mess with kitniot. It's a remarkable thing. It shows you how people are connected to minhag, that things can go by the wayside which are Ikrei Hadat. But kitniot is only going to go after a big discussion in 2015. On the other hand, and this one I want to finish with, I wrote you some comments on page number 7, which is that times are changing. And they're changing for the better in many ways. There is a kibbutz galiot. There is now a different matzav. It used to be that people lived in their villages in Pinsk, in Minsk, in Dvinsk, and that's where they stayed, that's where they were born, that's where they lived, and that's where they died. Now there is a blurring of lines between communities, which is a positive thing, not a negative thing. In the sense that Sephardi Ashkenazi now for many people is a bit like, you know, you say, well, were your grandparents from Galicianas or Litvaks? So for a few people in the world, that's still important. But for most people in the world, that's completely unimportant. It makes no difference to anyone, whether my grandparents came from Galicia or whether they came from North Poland. So too, Sephardi Ashkenazi, I think, for our children and grandchildren is becoming much more blurred, certainly in the religious Zionist community, where the Sephardim and Ashkenazim are very intermixed in shuls, in institutions, you know, many shuls where they have a like Sephardi Ashkenazi, this little sign, who's davening what, etc. In the Haredi world, that's not the case. There's a very strong divide between between Ashkenazim and Sephardim in schools, in institutions, and that can sometimes become very problematic in different ways. But it is blurring, and it's blurring across the board, and maybe that's part of the evolution of minhag. Yeah? So I'm not sure about these ultra-lenient psakim on kitniot. I think right now people are not able to kind of cope with them, and maybe that's fair enough. But over time, I think when you take a snapshot 30, 40, 50 years from now, kitniot will look very, very different. Just like nobody eats knedlach anymore in Israel. Well, okay, very few people eat knedlach anymore. We do, okay, you do. But I think you'll find that kitniot changes, and that's fine, because minhagim have to change. They cannot be changed overnight. And people who turn around and say, oh, kitniot, there's no basis to it, let's just scrap it, that's definitely against the halachic process. But this slow but gradual evolution of minhag, I think, is very important, and we'll see how it works. Yes, sir?
Do